Our second reading is 1 Corinthians 3, verses 10 through 17. By the grace God has given me, I lay a foundation as a wise builder, and someone else is building on it. But each one should build with care, for no one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. If anyone builds on the foundation using gold, silver, costly stone, wood, hay, or straw, their work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light. It will reveal with fire. The fire will test the quality of each person's work. If what has been built survives, the builder will receive a reward. If it is burned up, the builder will suffer the loss, but yet will be saved, even though only as one escaping through the flames. Don't you know that you yourself and God's temple, don't you know that you yourself are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in your midst? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy that person. For God's temple is sacred, and you together are that temple.
So my brother-in-law, Robert, did something very impulsive over the pandemic. He bought an RV. He's not alone. Supposedly over the last year, as work became remote and family life became a little too close indoors, RV sales grew like 62%. Robert's purchase of this new home on wheels was spurred on by his wife and kids moving to Japan in order to escape the pandemic in the United States. My sister-in-law, Midori, she's from Japan. Her family lives there. And so both my nephews also hold Japanese citizenship as well. And so they left California because at the time, the Japanese numbers were a little bit better than California's. Now they flip-flopped and they're back home. But they were gone for almost a year entirely while Robert was at home in this big empty house. And so as he's sitting at home, he realizes, I actually don't need to stay here either. I can pick up and move wherever I may need, wherever I can work and be kind of in the same time zone. And so he bought this RV and he set out on this cross-country road trip. He visited national parks and got to meet other people who were also in the new RV buying business. He drove through whiteout conditions along a mountainside, praying to God he wouldn't fall over the mountain. He saw the world's largest rocking chair and other, side of the road attractions that are on those little country roads. And he was able to see and stay safely with family who live all across the country during the pandemic. When he came to visit Jessica and I in Chicago, he flung open the door when he got here in front of our condo. And the first thing he said to us was, did you know that it is illegal to drive an RV on Lakeshore Drive? And I asked him, how did you know that, Robert? How did you come to find that out, Robert? And he said, well, a police officer pulled me over and told me it's illegal to drive on Lakeshore Drive, and I have the ticket to prove it. The temple in Jerusalem was believed to be the literal house of God by the Israelites and by the church in Corinth, whom Paul is writing to in our reading this morning. The temple was built by King Solomon and was completed in 957 BCE, but had been a longing and a dream for the Israelite people for quite some time. Ever since being freed from the Egyptians, they had been wandering in the desert for 40 years, not only having been searching for their promised land, but also for God's home. And as they wandered, they carried around this box that they called the Ark of the Covenant. If you've seen Indiana Jones, that's what he's looking for. But they believed that the presence of God lived in that box, kind of like an RV for God. This temporary home on the move. Like the Israelites desired to find a home in their wandering, they also desired for God to have a home as well. And so when they finally settle in Judah, Solomon builds this temple. And this home for God is not only extravagant, but it's sturdy. It's not going anywhere. At least, so they thought. That is until it was looted and destroyed by the Babylonians, who then deported the Jews to live under a tyrant king, Nebuchadnezzar. Years later, the Israelites were allowed to return to their homeland, and on the top of the priority list was to rebuild that temple, because where else was God supposed to live? And 600 years later, as Paul is writing to the Corinthians, the book that we read from this morning, he's writing to this new church that he has planted in the city of Corinth. The temple is still a large part of both Jewish and early Christian life. And these new Christian communities are still practicing many of the Jewish traditions and rituals that they had come to learn, like making a pilgrimage to Jerusalem, to the temple. Even churches like the Corinthians that are largely made up of Gentile converts, but also some Jewish followers. The early church was born out of a Jewish history, a community, and a way of life. But at the same time that Paul is writing to this community is writing its own future, creating its own ways of gathering and life together. This would include a major shift in not only where worship was happening, no longer in the temple, but gathering in one another's homes. Mostly because both Judaism and Christianity are seen as a threat to the Roman government, which is occupying the region and persecuting those who are perceived threats to Rome. So worshiping in homes instead of the temple is partially to keep people safe, but also there's a bit of a shift in understanding how the new church perceives its communal life, how to worship God and where God lives. But as you can imagine, this was a big point of contention between those who were Jewish and those for whom the early church was this new thing that God was doing. It became just one of the many things that Corinthian community would argue about. And part of this conflict was also driven by fear. Fear that the temple would not only become obsolete among the people, but that it would be destroyed again by a tyrant regime. And it would. 20 years later, Rome would lay siege to it and a final time. And even though it wouldn't happen for two more decades from when Paul is writing this letter, people living under Roman rule, they can feel the tension building. They can know what's going to happen in the future to where God lives. And so when Paul writes to this church in Corinth, telling them that they are God's home, that their bodies are the temple, it's not only a completely new paradigm, a paradigm shift from where the presence of God resides, but it is also a message of hope and courage for a future where the physical building of the temple would be taken away from them. Because they are God's home, no matter where they go and no matter if the temple is intact or destroyed. This is not just a message for them as individuals. When Paul writes to them, he does so by addressing them in the collective, not as individual people. For when they gather as a community, they are God's temple. When they come together in the ministry of Christ's message of love and justice and grace, they are God's home. Wherever they are providing a spiritual shelter for others, that is where God lives too. Whether they are in the temple or in their living rooms, in their hearts, God makes a home in them when they come together as the church. A few years ago at a church I was serving previously to this one, I was driving to church in rain kind of like this and saw some parishioners on the sidewalk who were walking to church that morning. And as I was stopped at the light, the family's littlest boy, Grayson, he was 4 at the time, he came and he ran up to my car and knocked on the window. So I rolled the window down. And Grayson said, "Hey, Pastor Britt, we're going to God's house this morning. Do you think you could give us a ride?" So Mom looked at me and said, "That's what he calls church. Sorry about that." So I said, "Sure, hop in." And so all during worship that morning, I could see Grayson walking around the sanctuary with this like canvas bag that he had brought. And as he was walking around, he was placing things in it that were in the pews. A little connections pad that marked the attendance, he put that in his bag. A hymnal, he grabbed it from the pew in front of him, placed it in his bag. There was a prayer shawl ministry at that church who knitted, you know, prayer shawls for folks who needed a little bit extra comfort during worship. He picked one of those up, put it right in the bag. And then at the end of service, I would go to the back of that church and welcome visitors as they were leaving. And so Grayson knew where to find me. So he ran up to me at the end of worship during the final hymn. And he said, "Pastor Britt, I don't think I have room in my bag for that." And he pointed at this giant globe that we would keep in the sanctuary. And he says, "Do you think you could help me put that in my bag?" And I said, "What do you need all these things for, Grayson? I've been watching you like take things off the pews. What are you going to do with all this?" And he says, "Well, I've invited God to my house for a sleepover. And I need all the things in God's house to be at my house, so God will feel at home at my house too." Friends, I'm going to tell you what I told Grayson in that moment. God feels at home with each and every one of us because God's home is wherever we find ourselves. There's nothing we have to make just perfect or do or be for God to make a home within our lives. God is already there. We may be in a season of stability and certainty. We may be in a season of questioning or doubt, and there God is. Whether we are feeling strong and fortified or feeling as if everything is going to crumble around us, God is right by our side. No matter if we come to church every Sunday or this is your first Sunday in a church building, God will be alongside of you as you walk into this place and as you leave this morning. Whether you have a place to call home yourself or home is an elusive or ever-changing place, God's home is within you. So not only does that mean that God is with you as individuals, but that when we come together as a collective, whether when we gather as a community, we are God's home for others to find spiritual shelter in. When we not only welcome others into this building we call the church, but we also leave this place as the church alive and present in the world. We are God's home, inviting others to know that there is a place they can call home to. When we bring our gifts and passions into this community and use them together to transform this world so that others may find a place to feel accepted and safe, we are God's home. When we open our hearts, our lives, our church to those who have been marginalized and disowned from the human family, God's home becomes not only a place of acceptance, but of healing and transformation. Where all know they belong, that they are loved no matter who they are or where they find themselves on life's journey, that they are at home with God and that God is at home with them. Thanks be to God. Amen.